scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left.
Off the glass and left corner to Aguila. Aguila the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Al Aguila. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts.
Flames talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Logan Gordon.
Okay, let's get things going. Happy Thursday. It is Thursday, August 15th, and we are underway this hour on Flames Talk. Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. It's Steinberg and Logan Gordon along with you on this Thursday edition of Flames Talk. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Save 40% on a Halo Smart Lock and start unlocking your house right from your phone. Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.
Welcome.
Hi, Logo.
Hi, Patrick.
What's going on?
Just living the dream, buddy.
Well, you know, it's been a stretch of time, long stretch of time since Flames Talk's been back. We're back this week. We're here with you next week as well. But we were on hiatus for exactly 1 month, 4 weeks off of Flames Talk. And there hasn't been, you know, Vickers and I talked about this on Wednesday's program. It has not been a summer of news quite like the prior two summers have been, which I think is a very good thing for the organization. I don't think you need three straight summers of franchise-altering move after franchise-altering
move. Probably good
for
Craig Conroy's blood pressure.
Everybody's heart probably happy that it hasn't been that type of summer. As we said, like, look, Andrew Mangiapane getting traded, that's not insignificant. Jacob Markstrom getting traded, that's not insignificant. But not the same type of, again, ground-shaking type moves that we saw in the summers of 22 and 23, rather. So for the first time in more than a month, we've got an opportunity to just dive in on the text line at 960-960. It's time for a Flames Talk mailbag this hour. And, you know, there's all kinds of, I think, intrigue in terms of what we see between now and the start of the season, or what we see once the season gets going. So if you want to hit on lineup questions for the coming season, I think that is as fascinating a thing as you're going to find. I don't know who's playing with who and the way that's going to end up looking. What are training camp battles going to look like? Where does Matt Coronato fit on this roster? Where does Jacob Pelche fit on this roster? Where does Martin Pospisil, who's going to go represent Slovakia at the Olympic qualifiers, where does he fit for next season? What about on the blue line? Does a young defenseman like Brustevich or Zane Parekh knock on the door in training camp? Line combinations, new contracts, potential in-season trades, wherever you want to go. Got a few questions in on the text line already at 960-960, but bring them in right now, 960-960. Sign your name if you want some credit, and we'll go through as many of these questions this hour as we possibly can at 960-960. That's why I say if you're listening live, get them in now as opposed to waiting and towards the second half when more of these questions start to come in, which is the way it always seems to go. You and I don't do mailbags very often, so this will be fun.
No, it's true. I think I can, off the top of my head, think of one other that we might have done during the season, but past that, no, we don't get to generally dive into the mailbag together, so I'm excited for this.
Well, let's start with Mitch B, who's starting us off on the text line here.
It's a good-looking name.
On this Thursday mailbag. Who do you guys think will be the surprise standout this coming season?
Surprise standout this coming season?
I mean, I know who I'm really interested in for training camp. I don't think that he ends up lasting the whole season, but I honestly believe that there is a real conversation to be had about Zane Parekh pushing for 9 games in training camp. I think that is a worthwhile conversation to have with a player who is as important as he's going to be for this team's future. But I don't know if that counts as a breakout player or anything like that. Honestly, I think this is a really good year for Matt Coronato to kind of stake his claim in terms of what he truly is at the NHL level, and not ultimately what he is, but I think Matt Coronato has got the opportunity with a good training camp to be able to put himself in a good spot for more offense this year, to play in a top 9 role. I think the Flames would like him to win a top nine role in training camp. I think they would like to be forced to push somebody onto their fourth line that maybe they wouldn't have 100% thought because of how well Coronado performs in the preseason in training camp. So I'll go Matt Coronado on that front.
I like the Parekh one a lot. That's going to be a really fun one to watch because the excitement around him at prospect camp and just the way that the young man endeared himself to Flames fans immediately after being drafted and the comparisons that he's drawn with his on-ice play and even who he is off-ice is a very confident young man. I think you'd love to see that if you're a Calgary Flames fan heading into this. You know, I don't know if this player that I'm thinking of gets significant NHL time this year. I got a really good feeling about Sam Hanzik.
Ooh.
As a guy that could be a surprise in a good way for this Flames team. I think given the fact that he's dealt with some injuries and hasn't been able to play as much with Vancouver the last couple of years as he would have liked,
mm-hmm.
I think has taken some, and to add into that, all of the prospects that have come into this organization that we've talked about over the last year in every deal that's happened, Hanifin, Tanev, Lindholm, all those guys going out brought us Brustevich and Yermo and all these different types of players that we've been excited, Grishnikov, that we've been excited to talk about. I feel like no one's talking about Sam Hanzik, and I feel like there's still a potential for Sam to take a significant step forward because I wonder, not that the pressure's off, but the spotlight's off in a sense because I haven't heard, I don't know about you, but I haven't heard anybody
right.
talking about
not
Sam Hanzik and what he's going to do. And I've loved seeing the videos this season. I know the Flames social feed shared a bunch, but Hanzik and Pospisil have been working really hard together as countrymates, and Pospisil's kind of taken him under his wing. And I know that some Flames fans would have liked them to go in a different direction when they drafted him. And you always wonder about a player's upside and when they're going to reach. There's been some development time. It's a guy that's played a big role in Vancouver at times in the WHL. I just think with a good training camp, I think there's a potential that we see Hanzik maybe get some of those early NHL games in as well to give him a taste of what he's going to get to. So I'm going to go with Hanzik.
It's funny because Hanzik is a 20-year-old. Like, he's entering his 20-year-old season, so staying with the Giants is probably not what we're going to see.
No.
The American League is probably where Sam Hanzik's going to start. So, you know, maybe there's a guy that he's yet to, he's played three American League games. He played one playoff game and two regular season games once his Giants season came to an end last year. Maybe he's a guy that has a really nice first half of the season in the American League and is able to start knocking on the door. You know, you think about some of the players over the last number of years that whether it's been the guys that I think of that have been in similar spots to Hanzik, Mangiapane, Matt Phillips,
yep,
Jacob Pelche. Those are just three names off the top of my head over the last, like, you know, 7-8 years that have gotten off to really nice starts in the American League. And that, even though Hanzik of those guys is a first round pick, and that's a little different than being a later round pick like Phillips and Mangiapane were, but I could see him really popping early in the American League, similar to what we saw from Coronado. Coronado proved that's a prolific guy at the American League level, and he still has to prove he can do that at the highest level. But I like that one because you're right. I didn't even think about Hanzik when I was thinking about a potential breakout. So I like that a lot.
And I think they're going to need a guy like him to provide some offense down the middle with the Wranglers. And maybe that taste that he got at the end of last year and being put in a playoff game like that, maybe that was the motivation he needed to have a big summer and come in and, you know, get ready for pro hockey.
What else we got here at 960 as we dive in on a Flames Talk mailbag this hour? Steinberg and Logan Gordon along with you. This is curious how you guys felt about the Mangiapane trade. Do you think it was good to make the move when Conroy did, or would he have been a better trade deadline move? That's from Matt and Cochran. Here's where I am on Mangiapane. I thought waiting until the deadline was the way to go because I thought that was going to be able to be your best bet at maximizing the asset. And I thought your best bet at maximizing the asset was a second-round pick. I thought if you could get a second-round pick for Andrew Mangiapane and you can get that at the deadline, then wait until then. Well, all of a sudden, they got that at the draft. And if you're getting what your max is going to get and Washington's offering you a second-round pick, you make that trade all day long. So I quite like the Mangiapane trade. I thought it was good asset management for a guy. Let's be honest. Mange and the Flames weren't going to re-sign.
Nope.
This is going to be his last year as a member of the team. Mangiapane hit an unrestricted free agency. He's closing in on 30 now. It's like, yeah, it's probably time for Mangiapane to go elsewhere with the way the Flames are going. Mangiapane has been an incredible story. He is, like, everything that he did for the Flames, he exceeded all expectations, and he was a great member of this team. And so you move him for a second-round pick. He moves on to Washington, and we'll see how it goes there. But I thought they got great value for him. I really do.
Yeah, here's how I'd look at it. Similar to the discussion about trying to maximize value ahead of the trade deadline, the other thing can happen too. And that's that maybe Mangiapane gets nicked up during the regular season and his numbers.
Now all of a sudden you're not maximizing.
And now you can't maximize value, and you're just trying to get anything you can to get any sort of asset back from a GM before the trade deadline. And let's be honest, the more we talk about this team, they might struggle to score and find results, and that might take a statistical hit from the level that a lot of players have been used to. And that's already sort of been a concern with Mange's game and the numbers that he's been able to produce here in Calgary. So I would have a hard time thinking, even heading into the regular season, that you are going to do better than a second-round pick at the trade deadline for Mange. So to your point earlier, Pat, of it's here now on the table, mm-hmm. why risk anything? Why not just take the asset and run? I think they did well with that.
This from Patrick and Hanson Ranch. Flames have a lot of cap space to weaponize. Should they also have offer-sheeted Oilers or offer-sheet more Oilers? If so, who? Well, first of all, do I think they should have gone down the offer sheet road for the two Oilers who ended up signing those offer sheets with St. Louis, Holloway and Broberg? Personally, I don't think now was the time. I have no doubt that the Flames were approached by the two agents. The two agents, that was a good little power play they made behind the scenes.
Yep.
Oh, no, they were surprised. They had no idea that the other guy, of course, it's Darren Ferris is Broberg's agent. And I forget who Holloway's agent is now. But regardless, fact of the matter is, the two agents knew what they were doing. And so I think they were shopping those two guys as a package offer sheet deal to all kinds of teams around the league. And the Flames having the cap space they have, I have no doubt the Flames were approached as one of those teams and said, would you be interested? I don't think logo now would have been the time. They are just, Craig Conroy is just starting his vision, his plan. He's just starting to get his T's crossed and I's dotted and all his ducks in a row and all your other lame analogies. He's just starting. And to give up assets and to go down that road, and I just don't think now is the time to make that type of splash. Me personally, I don't think that they needed to go down that road, and I don't think they do need to go down that road, but that's just me.
It's interesting. By the way, Blake Robson is the rep for Dylan Holloway.
Thank you very much.
Who helped out with that side of the deal. Yeah, I'm not... If the Flames had gone down that road, I think I would have been okay with it, given the relative small return on both of those deals as far as a second and a third round pick go. I don't know that I look at Broberg or Holloway as... Broberg's the really interesting one to me, because I'm curious as to what he can grow off of it and if this playoff winds up being a stepping stone for him. But I don't know, especially hearing Friedge on 32 Thoughts earlier this week, Pat, talk about how the Flames have kind of told everyone, look, that we're going to keep this pretty settled and we don't need to run around with our hair on fire like we have the last 2 years here. There's a media storm that happened because of this offer sheet and because offer sheets just don't have that. You crank that up by 10, maybe more,
if
the
Flames do it to Edmonton.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's another wrinkle.
And whether
to it
you agree with that or not, is your opinion. But it would have let off a firestorm around this league.
Yeah,
that was something that happened, and I just don't know if, as we talked about earlier, if everything that's happened over the last 2 years, that Craig Conroy looked at Broberg or Holloway or both of them and said, yeah, it's worth the S storm that's coming my way if they both sign this deal. Yep. So,
and I just don't think now is the time that
there's still Conroy lots of time to capitalize on your on your cap space and to talk offer sheets.
Their
there's
mass
lots of time
cap space isn't going anywhere.
No.
And the first summer of Craig Conroy getting his vision in place, yeah, I'm with you. I don't think that was the summer to ignite things to that degree.
We'd be sitting here yelling with Tom Gazzola from Edmonton Sports Talk about why Craig Conroy hates the Oilers,
yeah,
and why we're jealous that they're doing this and blah blah blah, and we'd be talking about Flames talk wouldn't even have anything to exist. It'd be just those for the next month and a half. So
here's one from Eric. Flames talk mailbag 960-960 on the text line. Hey Pat and Logan, if you had to predict the final standings today, what does the Pacific Division look like? Okay, so
sweet God,
I will put it to you like this. I have Edmonton number one. I think Edmonton wins the Pacific. I think Vegas slots in at two. I think Vancouver moves into three. I'll put Seattle four. I'm way out on Los Angeles. I'll put LA five, Calgary six, Anaheim seven, San Jose eight.
I will go. Whew. Edmonton one.
Yep.
By the way, I think
I have Edmonton, Vegas, Vancouver, 1, 2, 3. I think those are your three playoff teams. No questions asked. I'm not sure if there is a fourth Pacific Division playoff team. I have Seattle four, and I think they'd be in the mix, but I don't know if that's a shoe-in playoff team.
I'm going to go Edmonton, Vancouver, Vegas, Seattle, Anaheim.
You think Anaheim takes a step this year?
Yeah.
Okay. You've got LA falling back even more than I do.
I don't like
that. I do not like them at all.
Goaltending is just madness to me. Then LA, then Calgary, then San Jose. Mm-hmm. That's how I'd go right now. I don't like anything LA is doing, except for the jerseys. That's about it.
Jerseys do look good. Here's one from Conrad who says, with Oliver Shillington signing with the Avalanche for a one-year deal, where do you think things went wrong? I have nothing but love and respect for him after going through everything he did, but it seems like the bag may have proverbially been fumbled. I do think there were a couple of unfortunate missteps in the handling. I don't necessarily think it was due to any ineptness. It was more bad luck, as I understand it. So as I've explained a couple of times, and just to kind of Cole's notes it for you, as we know, even though you're not supposed to, every team talks to agents from the end of the season until July 1st, and many deals are basically signed or agreed upon before we get to July 1st. Again, as much as that's not supposed to happen, the NHL doesn't do anything about it. This happens, so teams are aware of what's going on, and contracts are being negotiated prior to July 1st, even though they're not legally supposed to be allowed to until July 1st. The Shillington camp, his agent is J.P. Barry, one of the most influential agents in the game. Shillington's camp believed that they had a multi-year deal with another team. That multi-year deal fell through because I believe there was an acquisition or something happened with the other. My understanding is something happened with the other team where something else fell into their lap, and it kind of, they were now no longer willing to offer that multi-year deal for Shillington because something else fell into their lap. And then that turned it into Shillington being in limbo because right around the opening of free agency, the other team was like, actually, we made other plans. The Flames also made other plans. Calgary, I believe, had a one-year deal on the table for Shillington, higher than the 1.05 he signed for with Colorado. But they had a one-year deal on the table, basically with the message being, We really want Oliver back. Let's see how it goes through the first half of the season on a one-year deal, knowing that, you know, he only played about a quarter of a season or so on a two-year deal. The last two years, let's see where things go on a one-year deal, and then let's sign something longer term if things are going in the right direction. That was the message from the Flames to the Shillington camp. Shillington camp had this potential multi-year deal on the table. They were more interested in that. It fell apart. Flames made their contingency plans. They had three or four comparables. They went with Jake Bean. Jake Bean wants to be here in Calgary, wants to be a member of the Flames. Same age, same shot, same role. And it kind of turned out to be that once that multi-year deal for Oliver fell through with the other team, the Flames had already made their plans and gone down the contingency road with Jake Bean. And it turned into a situation where it was a little more difficult for Oliver to find a spot. He did eventually find a really nice landing spot, though, with Colorado on that one-year deal.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody fumbled the bag.
It was more bad luck than anything else.
Yeah, going off of what you've said there, Pat, it feels like maybe if you're Shillington's camp, you put too much faith into a situation that was never materialized, right? It's fun to talk about a deal that might happen on July 1st, but until that actually comes through on the, I don't know, the fax machine, I don't know if that's still how they send contracts.
Probably the
emails,
NHL, it probably is the fax
right?
machine.
However, until that's actually there and you can put pen to paper, making that assumption was probably an error from Shillington's camp, and that includes him and that includes his agent. So I don't think that there was a fumbling of the bag necessarily. I think maybe they overplayed what may or may not have been coming their way from said team. And I think reality just is that there's just not a big market for a guy like Oliver that has not much NHL experience the last couple of years. That's just kind of how it is. And at this point in August, like you mentioned, to wind up with the Colorado Avalanche, of all teams, on a guaranteed contract and not have to PTO your way through training camp and through a team's prospect pool and all that sort of stuff, still probably works out okay if you're Oliver Shillington, because you still have an opportunity to go there and prove you're a full-time NHLer and parlay that into maybe a long-term deal with Colorado, maybe a long-term deal with somebody else. Because if you can prove that you play 82 games at a similar level to what he played in Calgary this last year at 33 or 34 games, then I think there will be a market bigger than the one he explored this summer.
This one from Yaragio in Red Deer says, out of all our prospects who haven't played a game in the NHL, who do you think will stand out at training camp and could potentially play a full NHL season? That one's tough. For guys that haven't played a game in the NHL, who could be potential full season candidates? I don't know if the only guys for Perek would be at the top of the list, although it seems unlikely that he would play a full NHL season. If he does, super cool. What an awesome story that would be. I'm here pounding the table about, you know, what about the idea of Zane Perek playing 9 games? I don't know if I'm quite ready to say he's going to play a full season. The only other guy would be Brustevich that I'd be super interested in, because, again, coming off the year that he had in the Ontario Hockey League, he got the top 2 scoring defensemen in the OHL last season as members of the Calgary Flames in Perek and Brustevich. So those would be the two guys that come to mind for me more than anybody else in terms of guys who have yet to play NHL games.
It's a great question, because it's not a long list. Pretty much everybody in the Flames system, as far as prospects go, that have an opportunity, I think, to play full-time NHL minutes this year, have already played NHL games. You know, the Kuznetsovs, the Solovyovs of the world, those kind of guys. Yeah, they've all, thanks to the fact that the Flames sort of fell out of things post-trade deadline last year, all got an opportunity to come in and play some NHL time. So it's so hard to see anybody jumping over those guys that even have minimal NHL experience. For me, all due respect to Brustevich, I think Perek's the only guy that I'm looking at to think could potentially do that. I think I'd probably put Poirier in that list ahead of Brustevich, even.
This from Curtis, who says, boys, what do you think the Flames over-under win total will be this year if he sets the over-under at 30. I think they will go over 30 wins. I don't know if it'll be significantly over.
30 wins is 60 points.
Yeah, throw in some overtime losses and stuff like that. I mean, you take a look at the NHL last year. Only one, two, three. There were only four teams who had fewer than 30 wins last year. So I think the Flames will. Columbus, Anaheim, Chicago, San Jose, the only teams that had fewer than 30 wins. I don't think Calgary is that bad this season. So I'll say over 30. Do I think they're a playoff team? I don't. But do I think they're over 30 wins? Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I'm going to say over, but not much.
They had 38 last year.
30 to 35.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm
to. Yep. I'm right in.
Braden in Hanna. What are the chances of
Hanna,
Zary?
Montana?
No, Braden, Hanna, Alberta.
Oh.
Home of Nickelback.
Oh, that's right.
What are the chances of Connor Zary spending consistent time at center this season? I think very strong. I personally have Zary written in as my third center. I have Kadri Backlund, and then number three to me is Connor Zary, and then probably Kevin Rooney is your number four center. That's kind of the way I'm looking at it to start the year. I know that, you know, there's Sharon Govich and Pospisil who could be interesting center ice options as well, but the guy that, for me, in my opinion, profiles longest term as a center on this team, and knowing that this organization now with Brstevich and Parekh joining the organization, the number one area of need for this team in terms of their system, they need to find a couple of prospect centers or younger players that could evolve into first or second line centers in this league. And of all the names that they've got right now, Connor Zary's at the top of my list. And for that reason, Braden, I think that there is a significant chance that Zary plays a lot at center this year, because I think it's in Calgary's best interest to see what they've got more than anybody else with Zary down the middle.
Yeah, the question to me leans towards, who do you feel more comfortable playing at center and trying it out for the season? Is it Sharon Govich or is it Zary? And based on the sample size we saw last year, I'm more intrigued at what Connor Zary could do at center. That's not to say that Yegor Sharon Govich was bad at center last year. I actually thought his two-way game stayed pretty consistent. He just offensively didn't have the same sort of pop, I think, knowing that the defensive responsibility that comes from being a center, and I just liked him better on the wing. So I think Connor Zary profiles better as a guy that's played more there in his time in junior, and I think gives you the best chance, as Pat echoed earlier, to potentially grow into a long-term option at that position, maybe more than anybody else of the NHL lineup that isn't already a fit there, like, yep, Backlund or Kadri.
It is Steinberg and Logan Gordon along with you this hour on Flames Talk. It's a Flames Talk mailbag all hour. Keep them coming if you're listening live at 960-960. Your questions as we move towards training camp in the coming season. 960-960 on your Flames Talk mailbag. We're coming at you this hour from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, rolling through. It is a Flames Talk mailbag this hour. Steinberg, Logan Gordon along with you. Happy Thursday. Keep it rolling at 960, 960. Lots of texts.
Happy Thursday.
Happy Thursday. Lots of texts. Lots of questions. Some good stuff as well. This reads, I think Marty Pospisil is going to have a breakout season this year and will be a standout and a 20-goal scorer. He has the drive and skill needed. I mean, Marty Pospisil was a breakout player last year. I do think there's a little bit more offense there. I don't know. Like, do you think 20 goals is in the offing at any point for a guy like Pospisil?
Maybe in the future. I do think this team is going to be offensively challenged this upcoming season. And I don't know if Pospisil is a guy that sees a lot of power play time next season for the Flames either. So I think he broke out in a big way in the 23-24 campaign. Absolutely. And I can't say I'd be stunned if he scored 20 at some point in this NHL career, but just given the guys that are, I think, going to be on the power play, and I don't see him being one of those guys, I don't think 20 is in the offing this year.
So if he plays on that line all season, I think we could see him go from 8 goals in 63 games to, you know, 15 goals in 82 games, that line being Kuzmenko and Kadri as well. If he stays with that trio, I could see the offense going a little bit higher. I see him being a double-digit goal scorer in this league. I think that once or twice he could flirt with 20. I do think he's got that ability, but on an every single year basis, this year, for instance, I don't know if I quite see him hitting 20, but I could see him being in around the 14 to 16 goal range this season. And again, as we know with Pospisil, his impact and what he means to the team is more than just what we see on the score sheet from him. This is from Dwayne in Midnapore. Keep him coming at 960, 960. We're into the back half of our mailbag, so we'll go a little bit more rapid fire here. But Dwayne says, do you think the perfect scenario for the next two drafts would be getting a third to sixth pick next year and then bottoming out for Gavin McKenna in 2026? I mean, look, if there is any way that the Flames could fall into Gavin McKenna in the 2026 draft, would be amazing. That's the exact player that this team needs to kickstart where they want to go. Yes, I mean, the Flames are not alone in him being the exact player. And honestly, I do think, Logo, if I were to say what is the year that I think might be the toughest standings-wise for the Flames, it's not this year. It's the year following. Reason being, there is more of an opportunity for some other veterans to be dealt leading into the 25-26 season, whether that's a Kadri, whether that's a Anderson, whether that's a Coleman. I think those guys are on this team this year, and for that reason, I think that I don't think they'll be number one overall pick conversation. The following year, though, I could see them being, I could see wins and losses being even more of a struggle than they might be this year. So I don't think it's out of the question that they could be in that conversation for 2026, especially if some of those moves end up being made.
Yeah, I don't know that there's an ideal, look, if you can get a number one overall pick and have your choice of the crop, that's always a good thing. As long as you make sure that those picks hit, then the Flames should be doing okay. Of course, ideal scenario is to match up with the other number one overalls that exist in your division, and there's more and more all the time. Thank you, San Jose Sharks and Macklin Celebrini, mm-hmm. and we know Connor McDavid exists in this division. You know, of course, you want to fight fire with fire. I don't know exactly how it rolls out as far as when they're least competitive in this process comparative to other teams. As we know, the NHL rolls in cycles for teams, yep. and who's going to join the Flames and in that sort of bottom tier of the league, and who's willing to not burn it all down, but you know, who's willing to take
those
similar steps.
Who's willing to lean more
into
that? Yeah, for sure.
It's still up in the air for me. So I think it's going to be interesting. I think they're going to be definitely talking about some real top end talent regardless. I mean, McKenna would be unbelievable, but I think it's just going to be it's too early for me to tell.
Ethan in Saskatoon, what are some possible trade returns for Rasmus Anderson if that ends up being the case?
CC Kulak, a first and a second, and then they can keep Broberg. No, I'm just kidding.
I was like thinking to myself, what is this guy talking about? I don't think an Anderson trade is real. Like, I think maybe the first time that becomes a little bit more realistic is closer to this year's trade deadline. Remember, he's got 2 years left on his deal. We don't know whether or not Raz is wanting to remain long-term with the Flames. I still think there's a potential that he would like to be a part of this solution and would like to be a leader and a driver on this team. So I don't think that trading Rasmus Anderson is something that the Flames should actively be trying to do. I think trying to get him to sign long-term and be a part of this and remain a long-term member of the Flames is far more desirable, at least in my opinion. But if that's not in the cards, and Ras looks at it and says that maybe he'd like a change of scenery or would like to explore free agency, or that's the indications that you're getting, then I think you have to start being open to those conversations. But I don't even think you start to really entertain it until this year's trade deadline and maybe a little bit more actively next summer. All that being said, I think first round pick plus is what you're talking about for a guy who can easily play on a lot of teams' top pairings.
Yeah, 27-year-old right shot D, under $5 million per season. That price tag is going to be big. Now, that being said, I'm with you in the sense that if I'm Craig Conroy, I'd need to be blown away to move a guy like Rasmus Anderson. Past Anderson, Weegar, and Bean, there's a whole lot of question marks popping up about NHL-ready defensemen. And as much as this is a rebuild and it's been a tear down from the core that we've known here in Calgary the last couple of years, you still need NHL players to lead the way for the Pareks and the Brsteviches and Poiriers of the world. And I think you're right. If Rasmus is willing to commit to Calgary and be part of the solution, knowing the kind of character person he is, I think he'd be one of the perfect guys to help lead the charge going forward in Calgary.
Time for a few more. 960, 960, keep them coming. This says, how many regulars on the roster now are not here after the trade deadline? My answer to that is two. Kuzmenko, Mantha. I think both are kind of in that pump and dump category where you try to pump the value and then see what type of return you get at the trade deadline. Kuzmenko and Mantha would be the two for me.
I can't disagree with that. I think both of those guys need to see big-time power play minutes. I think you need to try to find a way before the trade deadline to get both of those guys as close to 15 to 20 goals as you can and make somebody pay up. I heard Vickers earlier in the week talking about, especially on the Kuzmenko side of things, if you turn what was a cap dump to make a deal work from the Vancouver Canucks even to into even more assets, that's a huge win for the Calgary Flames. And I think Kuzmenko, I want to see what we get from Mantha as he comes into camp in a couple weeks' time, but Kuzmenko is, I think, 100% capable of upping that value with some offensive time here in Calgary.
This from Dave. Are the Flames going to be entertaining this year, as in, will they be showing great effort? I don't care about wins, but I do care about effort. I think what we saw last year is a really good indication, Dave, that the answer to that is probably yes. In that, what was the one constant that we saw from this group last year? Even though that team played hard, even after the trades, even after, you know, guys were moved out. And this team,
they did pretty well after guys got moved out for a while, actually.
And until the roster just wasn't able to be competitive with a lot of other rosters in the West. But the one constant was that these guys played hard, and not just young players. Like, look at the difference from one year to the next from Nazem Kadri as a member of the Calgary Flames. And
Blake Coleman had a career season
last year. Had a career year. It just was what, and you saw young players selling out, and Weegar was another great example. Like, this team played their tails off last year, and I think that is one of the really nice early accomplishments from Ryan Huska, is that he's been able to get that type of buy-in from the group. So Dave, based on what we saw last year, I still think that's going to be one of the constants for this group, is that they play hard. Are they going to be able to match talent for talent with a lot of other teams? No. But I think work ethic and those types of things, that'll still be on high, you know, part of their repertoire, and will definitely be one of the things that is kind of the constants. That's what I'm expecting anyway.
Add into that conversation a guy who I don't think takes a lot of nights off in Ryan Lomberg, and isn't going to let others around him take nights off either, as coming back more of a leader this time in his second stint in Calgary. And I think adding to that even more young players than we saw last year, wins, again, to that point, isn't probably most important for these guys right now. It's proving that they can be full-time NHLers, and if that's the case, you can't take nights off. You have to prove every single night that you deserve to be in this league. So I don't think the effort or entertainment value is going to suffer a lot this season. I might expect it to go up, to be honest.
This from Colin in Woodbine. What are the top three storylines going into camp? Well, okay, number one for me, goaltending. How does that play itself out? What is Wolf? Where's Vladar in his recovery? What is Cooley? So goaltending is without question one of my top three storylines. That for me, 100%. Two, in my eyes, Parekh. Is Zane Parekh a guy that can, with how exciting he is and how important he's going to be for this team in their long term, is Zane Parekh a guy who can come into training camp and, you know, make a little bit of a wave and make it so there's a conversation about whether he plays regular season NHL games? That would be a second one for me. And then the third is, where do the young forwards fit? Where does a Pelche fit? Where does a Coronado fit? Can they both fit in this team's everyday top 12? With the roster right now, I don't see it. Those would be three storylines for me. Any that you dislike or would
I don't dislike any of them, but my list would be different. Goaltending remains number one for me. Okay. I think that's the biggest question mark for this team. It's the most unproven area of this team. Number two for me is who's the third line center, because I think Kevin Rooney's your fourth. I think Backlund and Kadri are one and two on this. Or I should go Kadri, Backlund, one and two on this team. Mm-hmm. Who is that third center? Is it Connor Zary? Is it Martin Pospisil? Does he get a look at that spot? Do they go back and try Sharon Govich with perhaps some different wingers to see if that works and maybe unlock something they didn't see in the regular season from him? That would be my second one. And the third one for me is still the one that's existed since he got here, and that's, can Jonathan Huberdeau find any of that old magic? Is Anthony Mantha a guy that can unlock some of that potential? Or even having Ryan Lomberg back in the dressing room, a guy that's given some pretty big praise to his former teammate in Florida and thinks he absolutely can get back to that, because that's still the biggest contract handed out in Calgary Flames history that hasn't lived up to expectations at all, and I still think could be a really feel-good story for this organization if they can get that guy back producing the kind of points that they expected when he signed that deal.
Teammate in Calgary says, I think Zary hit 65 to 70 points with more power play time. That would be amazing.
That'd be huge.
And finally, this reads, what percentage of a chance would you give of seeing a notable addition or subtraction before the start of the regular season? Not a waiver claim, but a notable trade either way of a guy in or out with term and money. I would say percentage-wise, I'd say less than 10%.
I was going to say less than 5.
The only way that I see
it
happening,
so settled right now,
is if there's an injury, though. If all of a sudden somebody's, one of their top two centers goes down and, you know, player X is out for 3 months, well, then maybe a phone call is made about Kadri and maybe Craig Conroy's listening, right? Or a defenseman, and all of a sudden somebody's like, hey, Rasmus Anderson's only got 2 years left on his deal. Would you be like, those are areas where I could see it happening. But short of that, yeah, I'd say less than 10%.
Yeah, it's just,
especially based on what we heard from Elliot Friedman.
And there's just
on 32
so much money that's settled already. That's, I think most teams, and I mean, we've been doing the NHL offseason review on Sportsnet today for the last couple of weeks, and I've asked pretty much all of our guests if they feel like there's any work to do. There's a few RFAs around the league that have to be figured out, but most of the money is spent for teams that are willing to spend anymore. Even trade or free agent-wise. So, yeah, I really can't see Calgary being one of those teams that's going to break the bank before something happens here.
Great stuff on the text line.
Thank you.
Thanks to everybody who texted in. Those are all Logan's questions, actually. No, thanks to everybody who texted in. Great stuff at 960-960. Love doing the mailbag, and you know it's always kind of a regular thing that we sprinkle in on Flames Talk, so I wanted to make sure we got one of those in as we're back for the first week after gone for four. So thank you for all of your input at 960-960. Really appreciate it. Lots of questions. I thought it was going to be a little slower being a summer day, but no, they came hot and heavy as they usually do. That'll wrap us up this hour on Flames Talk. Logan's on Twitter at Fan960. Logan, our producers this hour, Cam and Shan. My name is Pat. That'll wrap us up this hour on the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Save 40% on a Halo Smart Lock and start unlocking your house right from your phone. Visit CalgaryLockandSafe.com.